And we're holding on Samach Ches Amud Beis, the sixth line. We're in the middle of talking about, good morning, Ellie, about the whole matter of parnosa, which is the amount that's given to a girl for her nadin, for her dowry. So we said in the Mishnah that suppose a girl was her father passed away and her mother or her brothers are arranging her wedding. So then we said that even if they gave her what she decides later is an inadequate nadin, where there's supposed to be a minimum amount, then she can demand that they give her it after all. And we talked about what that amount is. Rabbi Yehuda had said that you go according to what the father would have wanted to do. And we said in the Gemara that Shmuel holds the same way. And the Chachamim say that you go based on a fixed amount, which we said that Rebbe says it's 10%. So what we said so far is the default is 10%, but if we know what the father would have done, then he would do so. Then you do whatever he would have done. Tosfos said earlier in the Masechta that means specifically to go, actually not to Tosfos, earlier Rishonim bring the same thing as well from the Goinim, that it means that if we know the father was more stingy, we can go below 10%, but we don't really have any source, they say, to say that we should go above it. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tananabanan, Habanos, as far as the daughters, Ben Bogru Ad Shalei Nisu, whether the girl became a Begeres before she was married, or Ben Nisu Ad Shalei Bogru, or they got married and then they became a Begeres, either way, Ibdu Mezonasehen, once they become a Begeres, or once they get married, then they lose their Mezonas, because Mezonas, we said, are Tnoi Ksuba. We learned in a previous perek that the girls are entitled to mezonos, they're entitled to be supported by the estate until they become bergeres or until they get married, whichever one comes first. So they've lost their mezonos, v'loy ibdu parnasasan, but they haven't lost their parnasa. This one-tenth of the nechasim, or whatever the figure is going to be, they haven't lost that, meaning, in other words, as we said, similar to what we said in the Mishnah, that even if she got married and didn't receive the proper amount of parnasa, she can still demand it and based in later on. That's what Rebbe says. The parnasa is not meant to be limited in terms of when she becomes a begeres or when she gets married. It applies after that as well. That's Divrei Rebbe. Reb Shimon Elazar Oimer Af Ibdu Parnasasan. Reb Shimon Elazar says that no, they've also lost their parnasa, meaning that he says the whole concept of parnasa, the whole concept of the 10% is only if she's getting married as a ketana or a naira, but if she's a begeres, had the father been alive, she'd already be out of his reshus. Therefore, by the same token, now that she's a begeres, she's lost that. And the same thing, when she gets married, then she was willing to accept whatever they gave her for whatever the heirs, whatever her brothers or her mother or whoever it is, gave for the nadin. So therefore, if she doesn't protest and say that I want something else, then she loses it. Now, when she was a ketana, then we're going to say that a ketana can't be moichel. Therefore, we would say that she still is entitled to it later on. So that's Reb Shimon Elazar. Kate said, "Hey, Oisus." So what do they do if they don't want to lose that privilege? Sochus lahen bailin. They rent for themselves husbands, which means, in other words, what does that mean? You don't rent a husband. So Rashi explains, in other words, they arrange with people who are gonna marry them before they become a begeres, while they're still a ktana or a naira, or metzian lahen parnasasan, and then they arrange to get their parnasa through that. Because they say, in other words, listen, I already have a husband, and therefore I need the parnasa in order to prepare for my wedding. And then in practice, they don't get married until they're somewhat older. Shittim Mekubetzis brings from Tamidur Rabbeinu Yonah that to explain a little more detail that the vote is, in other words, we're talking about, they're not planning to get married as tanos, but they arrange with whoever their future husband is going to be that he should go now and demand the parnasa on behalf of his wife, on behalf of his future wife, who right now is a tana, and that way they're not going to lose their privilege later on. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar li Huna Hilchasa Kareb. So Rav Nachman says that Huna, meaning Rav Huna, they were chaverim, so he calls him by his first name. Said the halacha is like Rebbe. So as we said before, the default is 10%. Of the nechasim goes for the girl's nadin, and we talked about the idea yesterday that if there's more than one girl, then each, then so we start, we take 10% of the nechashim, of the nechasim, then 10% of what's left, and so forth until we reach, and then till if they're getting married all at once, we split that amount evenly among all of them. And if they're getting married one after the other, then each one gets more than the sister after her. However, Esvei Rava L'Rav Nachman, but Rava asked Rav Nachman, how can you say the halacha is like Rebbe? We said in our Mishnah, we said that if the Yisoma was married off by her mother or brothers with her consent, so it's with her consent, but nevertheless, she's a Tana, and therefore her consent doesn't count. The cost will of a mayor of a chemishim zuz, they wrote that she gets a nadin of 100 zuz or 50 zuz, and that's not anywhere near 10% of the nechasim. Then when she gets older, she's able to take away from them what she's supposed to, meaning up to the larger amount that she's supposed to get. So time of ktana. So only because the Mishnah is talking about only because she's a ktana, and a ktana is not capable of mechila. Therefore, we say that whatever she agreed to is not, we can't hold her to that. Hogdola, implying that if she was a gdola, if she was a naira, vitra, then it would sound like if they gave her at the time a nadin of 50 and she accepted it and didn't say anything, then it sounds like she was mevata. It sounds like she was willing to forego the rest and she doesn't get it. So how are you telling me the halacha is like Rebbe? So Rav Shimon Elazar would fit better with our Mishnah, where he says that once they get married, if they haven't done anything, ibdu panasasan. But Rebbe, who says loy ibdu panasasan, then how does that fit with our Mishnah? And given that Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, we're not going to assume without some kind of evidence that Rebbe gave us a stam Mishnah like Rav Shimon Elazar, whom he disagrees with. And the answer is loy kasha hod machoy hod loy machoy. It depends whether she was moicher or not. When Rebbe says loy ibdu, and the halacha, and Rav Huna was saying the halacha is like Rebbe, is where she was moicher. So she protested and said, you know what? You gave me a nadin of 50, but that's not nearly enough. I happen to know that the nechasim are much more than 500. Therefore, I demand more in keeping with that. So then we're saying that so loy ibdu parnasasan means that because she was moicha at the time, then therefore she's entitled to that later on. Hodloy machoy, on the other hand, when she wasn't moicha, that would be when the Mishnah is talking about that, where the Mishnah is implying that as a naira, if she didn't do anything, that as a naira she is moicha. That's talking about if as a naira she forfeits. That's talking about if she wasn't moicha. So then the Mishnah is saying if she's a ktana at the time of the marriage, she doesn't need to be moicha because a ktana anyway, we assume, is not capable of mechila, but a gdola would be capable of mechila. So if she actually protests at the time, I'm supposed to be getting more than that, then we pay attention to that and she hasn't forfeited it. But if she doesn't, then she has. That would be what we mean. Okay, and the Gemara says, Hachinami Mistabra. In fact, it's logical to make that distinction. So it's not just a distinction between whether she's a katana or a naira. It's a difference within a naira, whether she was moicha or not. And you have to say that, says the Gemara, Din kein kasha de Rebbe ad Rebbe. Otherwise, after all, you would have a contradiction between two statements of Rebbe. D'tanya, because we learn in a braisa, we learned it on Omer Aleph, Rebbe, a basan izonis mina achin, a daughter who's being supported by her brothers, meaning she's being supported according to the usual tnoi ksuba, that she's entitled to be supported until she becomes a begeres or gets married, netelus isu nechasim, that she gets 1/10 of the nechasim, implying nizonis ein shalom nizonis loy. So the implication is only because she's nizonis, only because she's collecting mizonis from them, which would be when she's a ktana or a naira. She doesn't get mizonis once she's a begeris. The implication seems to be that if she's not nizonis, then she's not getting isur nechasim. So why is that? So yet Rebbe himself, in this braisa that we just quoted before, says that loy ibdu parnasasan, even if they became a begeris. So what is it? Does she lose the parnasa? Does she forfeit the parnasa after she becomes a begeris or not? So obviously the answer is ela lav shmamina hodemachoy hodolemachoy. So obviously that shows that we do have to make that distinction between whether she was moicha or whether she was not moicha And therefore that would make the difference. Rashi interestingly uses the expression im ba'ali nase ba'od nizonis. If she's coming to get married while she's receiving mizonis, namely which is a tana or a naira, so Marsha points out about that, that listen, if she already got married, then she's not getting mizonis anymore anyway, then that's the equivalent of a begeris. She would have to be mocha. So, and if she was a gdola, she'd have to be mocha. And if she's a ktana, then we're saying that she doesn't have to be mocha because a ktana anyway can't be mocha. So therefore, that's why the Marsha and also Maharam say that that is why Rashi carefully uses the expression that she's coming to get married. So she's not married yet. And therefore it makes a difference whether, therefore, it makes, so she's still receiving mizonis right now. And therefore, being that she's a naira, it depends whether she's mocha or not, in terms of whether she gets the 10%. Okay, Shema Amina, so that proves it.
She explained what she told, that she can be moche. Maybe she doesn't know, she's too young. She doesn't know that she can.
Well, if she doesn't know, then I guess it's somebody's job. It's whoever's looking out for welfare. I mean, for one thing, we say Beis Din Avi and Shal Yisoyim, that Beis Din is supposed to stand in place of the father of a Yosem. So I guess if you have a situation like that, where the local Beis Din knows that whoever married her off, her mother or her brothers, gave her an inadequate nabin, then I guess they would have the responsibility to go and argue on her behalf, or to inform her at least that she should be mocha in order to be able to get it. So the Gemara says, Omer le Ravina le Rav. Omer le Rav Adaba Ava Mishimcha. Ravina tells Rava that Rav Adaba Ava told us in your name, in your name, Rava, that the rules are as follows. Bogra, if she became a begeris, einat tzricha limchos, then she became a begeris, but she didn't yet get married, then she doesn't need to be moicha, because even without a macha, she's still entitled to the one-tenth. Nisis, einat tzricha limchos. And if she got married, she's not yet a begeris, then she also doesn't need to be mocha. When does she need to be mocha? Bogra vin nisis. If she became a begeris and she got married, then in order not to forfeit the 10%, tzricha limchos, then she would have to be mocha. So the question is, mi amar Rava hachi? Did Rava really say that? That as long as she hasn't gotten married, she doesn't need to be mocha? Didn't we have before in the Gemara on Amar Aleph, where Rava had asked Rav Nachman from the case of a Yisoma of our Mishnah, where we said that only because she's a Katana are we saying that she doesn't need to be moicha, implying that if she was older, she would need to be moicha. The Shani lay, and Rav Nachman answered him that in fact the implication of our Mishnah that if she's older, that if she's a naira, she does lose it if she doesn't do something, would be hadamachi. Would be whether she's not on Amud Beis. Actually, we just had it earlier on our Amud Esvei Rav Rav Nachman. So we just said that the answer was hod machoy hod lo machoy. So now all of a sudden, what are you telling me, Rava? What is Rav Adaba Ava reporting in Rava's name that in fact it doesn't matter as long as she's not both a begeris and married, she doesn't need to be moicha? And the answer is like kasha. And the answer is there's no contradiction. Hod kamit zinaminayu hod lo kamit zinaminayu. It depends whether she's being supported by her brothers after she gets married. Now you can have, now as far as Tanoi Ksuba, they're only required to support her until she gets married or until she becomes a begeris. But you can have where out of the goodness of their hearts, after all, she's their sister, they continue supplying her mizonis after she gets married. So now, if after she gets married, where they're not even required to be supporting her anymore, nevertheless, at that point, if they didn't give her enough of a nadin, then if she doesn't say anything, even though she's not moicha, that would be this last statement of Rava, that in that case, then she hasn't forfeited the larger amount of the nadin, because she could have a valid claim. She could say, you know why I didn't bring them to Beis Din to demand my rights is because, listen, they're doing me a favor and they're supporting me now when they're not required to. So therefore, I'm embarrassed to go and bring them to Beis Din. But nevertheless, I still have in mind that eventually then I plan to demand that from them. As opposed to, if they're anyway not supporting her, then we say that there's nothing for her to be embarrassed about. Let her take them to Beis Din and get what she's supposed to. And if she doesn't, if she's not moicha, then she's forfeited it. So far, in other words, we have, so there's several different distinctions. So if she's a ketana, we're saying that she's never moichel on it, because a ketana is not capable of being moichel. If she's a naira, and she's getting married, so then we say it depends whether, as a naira, actually, she's still entitled to mezonos. So then also we would say the fact that they're giving her mezonos as they're required to, so that's neither here nor there. So therefore at that point also, so then we have what the Mishnah is implying. The Mishnah is implying that she's going to forfeit it as a Naira. So that would be, if she's not Moicha, then she's going to forfeit it. Because as a Naira, she has every right to be Moicha. She's already a Naira. She's a Gdola. So therefore, she has to be Moicha. She'd have to protest that she gets more. And if not, then she's going to forfeit it. She can't say, I'm embarrassed because they're supporting me, because after all, they're required to support her at that point. Once she becomes a Begeris, and she's getting ready to get married, as Rashi said before, as opposed to if she's already married, that's another matter. But if she's a begeris and getting ready to get married, then we're back to, then it depends on whether they're supporting her or not, whether she's required to be moicha in order not to forfeit or not. Okay. The Gemara says, Omar Rav Huna, Rebbe Parnosa Eina Ketnoi Ksuva. Rav Huna says that Rebbe had said that Parnosa, this amount that she's given for the dowry, for the Nedunya, is not like the Ketnoi Ksuva. So we have to figure out in what sense. My Eina Ketnoi Ksuva. In what sense do we mean that it's not like Ketnoi Ksuva? Are you going to tell us that the difference is that if there are nechosim meshubadim, that if, suppose you have that, as we're going to discuss further on in the Gemara, suppose you have that her brothers inherited the estate, now they went and were meshabed some of the land that they inherited, which could either be, as the Gemara is going to discuss further on, it can be that they sold it, or it can be that they mortgaged it. We'll talk about that soon. Anyway, you're going to say that it means that Parnosa, she could even, in order to get her 10%, she could even take from those, as usual with a Baal Choyv, where after all, you have the regular case where Reuven owned property and then Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and then after he borrowed, sold some property to Levi. So the din is, we know throughout Shas that Shimon is entitled to take away the property from Levi to satisfy the debt, and then Levi will go back to Reuven and square accounts with him. So you would say the same thing over here. The brothers were meshabed the land, they sold it, let's say, and now we're saying their sister is entitled to go and take that away from the buyers. But on the other hand, Tnoi Ksuva, in order to support herself, you can't do that. Now that, so Rashi explains like this. In principle, she ought to have been allowed to. But the thing is that the other Tnoi Ksuva, such as Mizonis, are open-ended. So therefore, Mipnei Tikuna Olam, there's a series of takonis that describes in the Masechta Gittin that the Chachamim made Mipnei Tikuna Olam in order to allow the world to function well. So one of them has to do with this. If we said that you're able to collect from the Shabbadim to pay for Mazin Ha'isha, the Habanis, in order to support the Amana or to support the daughters, nobody would ever want to buy property because they're going to say to themselves, there's an open-ended commitment over here. How do I know at some future time they're not going to end up taking this property away from me to satisfy that? So therefore, I'm not going to want to buy it in the first place. I don't want the hassle. So therefore, if they took an oil, Macham said you can't do that. On the other hand, Parnosa is not an open-ended thing. It's a one-time thing, and it's got a certain defined amount, 10%, as we've been saying so far, or possibly less than 10%, we said if the father was stingy. So therefore, a buyer is not going to be afraid to buy on that basis because he knows that it's a one-time defined thing, and therefore he can start figuring out how much he can estimate the assets of the person he bought it from are, and therefore whether it's worthwhile over here or whether it's likely to be taken away from him, as opposed to by Mizonis, it's open-ended, you can't do that. So anyway, so you're going to tell me that Rav Huna is telling us that according to Rebbe, you're saying that Parnosa you can collect from the Shabbadim, but Mizonis you can't. In that case, my kamash milan. In that case, what's the chiddush? Ha'maisim b'chol yom. We see this happens all the time. Mitzi in the parnosim and mitzi in the mezonis. That we do just that. We collect from from the Shabbodim for Parnosa, for the Nadin, but not for Mizonis. Now, Tosfa says, so, okay, so you know why it's common? Because Rebbe said it. So what's the Gemara's question? But Tosfa says, because the way that Rav Huna is phrasing it in the Beis Medrash, he's saying, Omer Rav Huna, Omer Rebbe, you should know, Chiddush. Rebbe said this, you know, implying that before Rav Huna said this, it wasn't even well known. And in fact, we're going to have further on in the Gemara where Rav Yochanan argues on it, and the Gemara is going to discuss whether Rav Yochanan even knew of the statement of Rebbe. So therefore, so if it's something that's being done all the time anyway, then Rav Huna doesn't have to tell it us, doesn't have to tell it to us as a chiddush. So there must be a different meaning in what Rav Huna is quoting Rebbe as saying. So ev ela de ilo parnosa gavya nami mimetalti. So you're going to say that when it comes to parnosa, when it comes to the nadin, she's able to collect even from the metalin that were left as part of the estate. Or tnoik suba mimakarki gavya mimetalti le gavya. And you're going to say that tnoik suba, the support of the daughter or the almana for that matter, can be collected only from karka, not from metalin. Because again, that like the ksuba itself, the shibud is primarily only on the karka. So you're going to say that that's what it is? No, can't be. The Rebbe Aidi Vaidi Migba Gavya. As a matter of fact, according to Rebbe, and after all, Rav Huna is quoting us in the name of Rebbe, he would say that both of them can be collected from Metalplin. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Echad nechosim sheyesh la nachrayus ve'echad nechosim she'en la nachrayus. Whether we're talking about nechosim which have achrayus, which is Gemara speak for land, there's achrayus on it in the sense, again, that if a person borrows money and then he doesn't have what to pay back, if there's karka that he previously sold to somebody else, then the debt can be collected from that karka. So therefore, we call them nechosim that have achrayus on them. Or nechosim she'en la nachrayus, namely metaltlin, where you don't normally have that shibud. Nevertheless, motzien la mezoin ha'ishav ha'abon u'v'labonis divrei Rebbe. Nevertheless, Rebbe says that you can collect. Now, even though also usually the rule is when you're collecting a debt from yisoimim, usually the rule is you can't collect from metaltlin. But here, when it comes to tnoi ksuba, when it comes to mozen ha'ishav ha'abonis, which are all tnoi ksuba, Rebbe says you can collect them from metaltlin, even though those metaltlin are now in the possession of the yisoimim. So therefore, so you can't say that Rebbe is making that distinction between that and between that and Parnosa, because if we're saying that Parnosa you can collect from them and Mizonis you can't, the fact is Rebbe is saying Mizonis you also could. And by the way, Tosfa says you can't say so. What are you going to say then? You're going to say that maybe the other way around, Parnosa. Rebbe would say that Parnosa can't be collected from a Talpin, only Mizonis can. No, because if you can collect Mizonis from a Talpin, all the more so Parnosa. After all, Rava said before that, that Parnosa, Shomin Ba'av, we figure out how much the father would have wanted to give for Parnosa, and we do accordingly, as opposed to Mizonis, we're saying that Rava himself says later on, only from Karka, so therefore we see that in a certain sense, Parnosa is stronger than Mizonis. So it can't mean, so again, if we're saying that Parnosa can be collected from, if we're saying that Parnosa can be collected from Metautlin, and you're going to say that Rebbe would say that Mizonis cannot, but we see in this Braisa that Rebbe says you could. So Ella, my Parnosa ain't a Ketanoi Ksuba. So what do we mean, this expression, that Parnosa is not like Ketanoi Ksuba? We mean L'chidatanya. We mean in terms of the following halacha. Ha'oimer al yozunu b'noisav minachosav, if a person says before he passes away, I don't want my daughters to be supported out of my property, ain't shaymin loy, we don't listen to him, because that's Ketanoi Ksuba. He has no ability to override that. So nevertheless, his daughters are going to receive Mizonis until they become Bergeres, or until they get married, as the case may be. On the other hand, if he says, Al Yisparnus Ubenoisav Menachosav, but if he says, I don't want my daughters to have Parnosa out of my Nechosim, Shomin Loi, that we do listen to him. Shab Parnosa, Enoch Ketanoi Ksuba, because this is not like Ketanoi Ksuba, so he has the ability to override it. It's more of a Choiv on the Yisomim. And therefore, if he's saying that that choiv shouldn't exist, then fine, she's not entitled to parnasa. Okay. The Gemara goes. What?
Parnasa. The difference with parnasa and mizonis in terms of assets.
So the difference is mizonis is ongoing upkeep of the girls, giving them food, clothing, other basic necessities. Parnasa is a one-time thing. Is the nedunya. For the 10% or whatever the figure is, that's going to be given to them for their dowry when they get married.
But where does it come from exactly?
What, Parnasa? We learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a pasuk that recommend, where the Navi recommends to the people to provide a nadin for their daughters, so people will be willing to marry them. But nevertheless, it's not tnoi ksuba. It was never made as an official tnai of the ksuba. Therefore, the father has the right. Therefore, the father has the ability to override it.
Yeah, but my question is, does it, the father has panasa, is an asset that's sold, or is it something that he gives on a regular basis?
Parnassa is not on a regular basis. That's what we're saying. Parnassa is a one-time thing. But so far, what we're saying is that in order to collect Parnassa, she can even collect it from the Shabbatim. That's what we talked about before, and we're going to continue talking about now this question about if the brothers sold or mortgaged Karka, can she collect from it for her Parnassa? That's what we're going to be discussing about now. All right, let's go on. By the way, you're a little bit hard to hear, so I don't know, maybe you're too far away from the phone or something. But anyway, let's go on, and we'll see if your questions are answered as we go along. So the Gemara says, Tolalei Rav le Rebbe b'nei chit. One time Rav wrote a letter to Rebbe, and between the chiti, he asked the following questions. Now, what is b'nei chiti? Rashi says it means between the lines. Tosfos brings that it means that he had a bunch of things to ask Rebbe, so he had like sheets that were sewn together, and between the stitches, he wrote this question. Now, why would he do that? So one possibility that Shitub Kabetzis brings is maybe he realized afterwards he had forgotten, so therefore he stuck it in over there between the lines. On the other hand, Maharam Shif points out this was a period when he weren't yet allowed to write Torah Sheval Peh. So therefore, he didn't want to write it openly. So therefore, he wrote this question in the middle of. He has a letter of greeting that he's writing to Rebbe, just telling him, asking how Rebbe is doing and discussing family news and whatever. And in between the lines or in between the stitches or whatever, he hid this question in order that he's not writing Torah Sheval Peh openly. Anyway, Rav's question was, Ha'achen sheshibdu mahu. What happens if the brothers created a shibud on property? So what's the din? As far as what's the din? So that was all he wrote. So have a Yosef Reb Chiya Kameh. So when Rebbe received the letter, Reb Chiya was sitting in front of him as a Talmud. Omerle. So Reb Chiya asks, Mochru a Mishkenu. So Reb Chiya asks, when my nephew Rab wrote you this question, what is he talking about? Is he asking about if the brothers sold Karka that they inherited, or is he talking about if they mortgaged it? Omale, so Rebbe says, my naftanina, what's the difference? Bein mochru ben shemishkenu, whether they actually sold it or whether they only mortgaged it for a debt, either way, mitzien laparnosa bein mitzien lamazonis. Either way, the daughter would have the right to take it away from the buyer or from the receiver of the mortgage in payment of her parnosa, but not in payment of her mizonis. So mizonis, we said before, we have mipnei tikkun olam, the Chachamim said you can't do that. But parnasa, again, given that parnasa is not an open-ended thing, it's a one-time thing, then therefore therefore she has the ability to take away from the chasim shabbat. So Rebbe is saying it doesn't make a difference what the kind of shibud was. So the question is, well, why did Rav phrase it so ambiguously such that Rav Chiya had to ask? If Rav's original question was about the case where the brothers sold the property, then let him ask that. And if he's asking about when they mortgaged it, then let him write that. Either way, why did he write so ambiguously? And the answer is, in fact, Rav Tavayo Kamibayle. In fact, Rav was wondering about both, whether the brothers sold it or whether they mortgaged it. So Rab figured like this. If I write the question, what happens if the brothers sold the property, then I'll know if Rebbe answers me that the daughter could take it away from the buyers to collect her parnasa, then I'll know kol sheken mishkenu, then I'll know all the more so that would imply when it was only mortgaged, where after all, when it's only mortgaged, means it's still in the possession of her brothers, it's just the other person has a shibud on it, so all the more so. But if I ask about mochru, and Rebbe answers me, the answer is that in that case, the daughter can't take it because it would be similar to mizonis. Well, then, akati mishkenu kamibayli. I'd still have the question, what about if they only mortgaged it? So therefore, I don't want to write Mahu. Similarly, Rav continues to think to himself, E kasivnale mishkanu, and if I only write that they mortgaged it, then again, then it's the other way around. E shalachli de'ein moitzien, if he answers me that she can't take away even in that case, even though the primary ownership of it still belongs to the brothers, but nevertheless, if Rebbe were to answer that once somebody else has a lien on it, then you can't take it away from him anymore, well then, kol sheken mahu, then I would know that, yes, that applies all the more so if they sold it where they've completely lost their ownership of it. But ishalachli moitzien, But if Rebbe sends back to me to say that you could take it away in a case of a mortgage, akati mahu coming byly, then I'm still going to have the question, what about a sale? Maybe a sale is different. So therefore, Rav is thinking to himself, whichever one I do, whether I write mahu or whether I write mishkanu in my question, either way, there's a chance that I may not get the full answer that I need. And the fact is, I'm wondering about both of them. Therefore, echtav le shibu, let me use the expression that they created a shibu, they created a lien, the mashmahachi, or mashmahachi, where that can be understood either way. And then when Rebbe replies to me, he's necessarily going to have to reply on both, on all cases of shibu, both machru and both mishkanu. And that way I'll have my answer. And in fact, as we said, that Rebbe answered verbally to Rav Chiya, and the pashtus he wrote later on to Rav to say that yes for parnosa, no for mezonos, and it doesn't matter whether machru or mishkanu. Okay. Now the question is, so now the Gemara continues. V'Rabbi Yochanan Amar Echad Zeh VeEchad Zeh Ein Metzia. Now Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. He says that either way, you cannot collect from the chosim shabadim for parnasa. So unlike we were saying so far, we said at the bottom of the previous amud, and we just had this story where Rebbe holds that for parnasa you can collect from, she can collect from the chosim shabadim. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Well, ibari lahu. So now the chachamim had a question: is it Rabbi Yochanan lo shniyah lehoder Rebbe? Is it that, why is Rabbi Yochanan disagreeing? Keep in mind, Rabbi Yochanan is an amora and Rebbe is a tana. Usually, an amora can't disagree with a tana. So is it that Rabbi Yochanan did not hear what Rebbe had to say, the Ishmielei Havim Akabalei, and if he had heard what Rebbe says, he would have accepted it and he would have retracted his own opinion, or maybe he knew of what Rebbe said and he still consciously disagreed with it. Which, how would he be able to do that, he being an Amora and Rebbe being a Tana? So the Rashba explains in one of his Trubas that the Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Yochanan might have had a different Braisa that supports his opinion. So, okay, Rebbe says one way. Okay, but I have a different Braisa, which also is from the Tanoim, that says differently. And therefore, I'm not obligated to accept Rebbe's opinion. Or would we say that if he knew that what Rebbe had said, then maybe Rabbi Yochanan would say, okay, I have a Braisa, but since Rebbe said differently, then I have to figure maybe the Braisa that I know of is mistaken or something, and let me follow Rebbe. So what is it? So Toshma de Itmar. So we can bring a proof from the following discussion. Suppose that a man passed away and he left two daughters and one son. So now what happens? We know the son inherits the whole property, but the daughters, we said, are each entitled to parnosa. They're each entitled to one-tenth of the nechasim. So what happens? The kodma harishoni v'natla isur nechasim, the first daughter went ahead and collected her one-tenth for her nadin. The second one did not have a chance to collect before the son passed away. So now the son having passed away and he doesn't have children, we're assuming, then who yaushins the property? His sisters, because that's how it works. If a man dies without sons, then his daughters inherit him. And if he had a son and then the son died without children, then it goes back to his father. And his father already being dead, then it goes down to the next line, to the next one in the line, namely the daughters. So it winds up that the daughters inherit the property. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shniya Vitra. So Rabbi Yochanan says at that point, the second one was Mevater. In other words, the second one has forfeited the Isur Nechasim. She didn't collect it yet, but she and her sister are inheriting the whole property anyway, so she doesn't need her Isur Nechasim anymore. And the discussion continues. Amar Rav Chanina, G'dolu Mizu Amra. Rav Chanina says, why do you even have to say that? Didn't the Chachamim say even a bigger statement than that? That a mitzian leparnosa ve'en mitzian lemezonos. That the Chachamim said, as we said before, that Rebbe said that the daughter is entitled to collect for parnosa from nechasim shabadim, but not mezonos, because again, tikkun olam. So how can you, Rabbi Yechon? So in other words, he's saying that even when it's actually owned by the brothers, and they just created a shibur on it by selling it or by mortgaging it, you're still saying that she can collect from it. How can you, Rabbi Yechon, be saying that in this case where the daughters inherited the property, that she shouldn't be entitled? Why shouldn't we say that, yes, she inherited the property 50-50 with her sister, but first we have to earmark 10% of the nechasim for her eventual nedunya, and then they'll split it evenly among themselves. Why should she forfeit it just because of that? If she doesn't forfeit it when the brothers sold it, when the brothers inherited it and then sold it to somebody else, why should she forfeit in this case? Now, the Gemara says, v'im issa, if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan did not know of Rebbe's statement, namely, man omra, Then he should tell Rav Chanina who says you're saying she's entitled to collect parnasa from Mishabodim. Who says that's the case? So the fact that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't say that seems to imply that he accepts Rav Chanina's argument, not that he changes his mind, but he says, you know what, you do have a point. We have to find a reason to distinguish between the case where the brothers sold it versus where she and her sister inherited it. But nevertheless, the underlying idea that Rav Chanina is saying is correct, that in fact, if the brothers inherited the property and then sold it, she's still entitled to collect Isur from the part that was sold. So that would show, in other words, that Rabbi Yochanan did know of Rebbe's statement, but when it comes, now he disagrees with it, so because he holds there's a reason to draw a distinction. But if he didn't know of Rebbe's statement at all, then why would, when Rabbi Chanina makes this argument, then Rabbi Yochanan should say to him, what kind of an argument is that? You're bringing me a proof from the case where the brothers sold the property. That itself, you need to show me that that's correct before you use that as a basis to argue against my opinion where the daughters inherit. And the Gemara says not necessarily. The Dumala Ulam Lo Shmiele. Maybe in fact Rabbi Yochanan did not know of Rebbe's statement. In fact, if he had heard of Rebbe's statement, he would accept it and take back his own opinion that if the brothers sell the property, that you can't collect from it. The shiny hossam, but it's different in this case where the daughters inherit the Ikar Robach Besa. After all, you have a much greater amount available in the household. Namely, she's not collecting only 10%, she's collecting 50% because she's yaushing the whole property. So you could say in that case, because he's collecting so much, then therefore maybe we could say she's mevater on her 10%. So the first daughter already received her 10%, we're certainly not going to make her give it back. But to collect a new 10% at this point, where she's already inheriting the whole property, that Rabbi Yochanan would say that she can't do. So maybe in fact, so Rabbi Yochanan might well distinguish between the case where the brothers sold the property and created a shibud on it versus where her sister and she inherited the property, even though conceivably you could say there's a similarity, because now you could say she has a shibud against her sister, but the difference is in this case, she's inheriting 50% of the property.
When you say the sister's means that there was no brothers involved?
Means that, so we said there was a brother, but then he died afterwards. So he inherited the property, then he died, and now the sisters have inherited all of it. Tosfos, by the way, brings up an interesting point. So what about, for example, we learned before, you could have a case where there's 10 daughters and each of them is getting an issu of what's left over. And in some cases, we divide it up among all of them. In some cases, each one gets her part. So you have, so most of them get far less than 10%. So maybe even all of them get less than 10%. We talked about yesterday, you could have where there's 10 daughters and each of them gets her issu, each one an issu being an issu of what remains. So by the time we calculate it all out across 10 girls, we have about 65% of the nechasim, and then we divide it up among the 10 of them and it's 6.5% apiece. Tosfos says, maybe in that case, this Ravach Besa wouldn't apply. Why would we say she's not entitled to her issu nechasim? Because she's getting 50% of the property. Or if there's three daughters, she's getting 33%, etc. But maybe not once it reaches the point where anyway, she's only getting 10% of the property. And in terms of Nadin, in terms of Parnasa, she's only getting 6% or 7% or whatever it is. Maybe this din wouldn't apply. Tosfos leaves the question open. Anyway, so you could say, so there's not necessarily a proof from that one way or the other, whether Rabbi Yochanan heard of Rebbe's din and consciously disagrees with it in the case where the brothers sold the property, or whether Rabbi Yochanan Bechlal did not hear of Rebbe's din, but he would say that in any case, whether we follow Rebbe or not, it's different when the daughters are inheriting the property. But if we're bringing up this matter of robach besa, that once there's a larger amount of money in the house, then parnasa doesn't necessarily apply. So amale Rav Yemel Ravashi elameyata. So by that logic, you're telling me once robach besa is a consideration, then there's no parnasa elameyata. By that logic, ashkecha metzia ba'alma. What if the younger daughter found a metzia? What if she found a buried treasure or something? De'ika robach besa. All of a sudden, now you have a lot more money in the house. Hachinami de'layavin and la'isur nechasim. You're going to say that she doesn't get her isur nechasim. Of course not. So why should it be any difference if she had? So what's the difference? Whether a windfall that she found a buried treasure versus a windfall where she and her sister are inheriting the entire estate? And the answer is Omalei. So Rav Ashi answers, "Ano Rovach Beisa mehani nichsi kamina." We're talking about Rovach Beisa that comes from the nechasim themselves. So the fact that she found a metzia, that's a separate thing. That doesn't factor into this. That it belongs to her. It's not part of the estate. Therefore, we're not counting that. Therefore, that doesn't cause her to forfeit her isur nechasim. What we're talking about is given the isur nechasim is meant to be 10% of the nechasim themselves, then now if instead of 10%, all of a sudden she's yarishing 50%, then we can already say that Rabbi Yochanan can already be saying that Shnia Vitra, that the second daughter has forfeited her Isser because she's inheriting the whole thing anyway. And not the whole thing, she's inheriting half of it anyway.
I know he asked the same question before.
Yeah.
There's Parnasa
and there's Mizonis.
Those are two.
So Mizonis means
Isser that, is a third thing? Or?
No, Isser is Parnasa. When we're using Isser, we're saying before, we learned earlier in the Sugya, that Rebbe says the default amount for Parnasa is Isser Nechasim, is 1/10. Unless, as we said in the Gemara, unless we know that the father was stingy and would have given less, and then we do less. But otherwise, the default is to assume that Parnasa, that the Nedunya, is gonna make up 10% of the Nechasim. Yeah, Mizonis is something else. Mizonis is the food and clothing and whatever that she gets on an ongoing basis as long as she's a Ktana or a Naira or until she gets married.
But it all come to the same place.
Right, but we said there's differences. In particular, we said one big difference is Mizonis cannot come from Nechasim Meshabadim because we said Mepet Tikkun HaOlam. Because otherwise nobody's going to want to buy property because they know there's an open-ended commitment on it as opposed to Parnasa, one-time thing, the defined thing. That. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omer Amemer, Bas Yereshes Havya. Amemer says that this, when we say that the daughter is entitled to Isur Nechasim for her Nadin, that she's considered a Yereshes as far as that. It's considered as if it was a kind of Yerusha. Omer Rav Ashi L'Amemer, but Rav Ashi asked Amemer, what does that mean? Ilu Boi L'Saluka Bezuzi. Think about it. A Yerush is entitled to his share of all the Nechasim. You can't have, let's say, for example, when you have, let's say, in a typical case, when you have a bunch of brothers yarishing the property, one of them can't say to the other, you know what, each of us is entitled, let's say there's three of us, so each of us is entitled to 33%. You're entitled only to the money. I'll give you the whole estate. The whole estate is worth $1 million, let's say. So fine, I'll give you a third of $1 million in cash and go away. You know, I don't want to give you any of the fields or any of the other metallic. Can he do that? Obviously not. Each one has the right to say, I want for my part from each of the parts of the Yerusha. But over here, Ilu Boi L'Saluka B'Zuzi, if the brothers want to give her the 1/10 with money and tell her, in other words, you're not entitled to take karka for it, just take money and here's your 10% and go. Hochinami de Matzi L'Saluka, would they not be able to do that? If you're saying she's like a Yodish, that would mean they're not allowed to do that. Why ever not? Omalei Ein. And Amema says, as a matter of fact, yes, if they want to tell her that, she would be able to say that, no, that she would be able to say, I'm entitled to take my portion from each karka or from each part of the Yerusha or whatever. What about Rav Ashi continues asking, so he asked Iboi L'Saluka B'Choda Ara, and if they want to give her one particular field, which will satisfy the Isur Nechasim, are you telling me that also they wouldn't be able to? And Amema says, yes, she's considered in every sense like a Yodish. So she has the right to decide, like any other Yodish, where she's going to get her Isur Nechasim from.
I thought that the women, the sisters are not...
The sisters don't usually...
But they make it...
That's the thing. So now Amema is saying... So we're going to end up schlugging up Amema. But right now, Amema is saying that... That's how it is. That she is However, Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi disagrees and says, no, Bas Bala Schoy Bhavya, she's not considered like a Yodesh, she's considered rather like a Bala Schoy. Now, when it comes to a Bal Choy, when a Bal Choy comes to collect, he doesn't have the right to say, I want to collect from this particular land or from this particular metalpilin or whatever, unless there's a specific shibur on those. They can tell him, we owe you $1,000. Okay, here's $1,000 cash, and that's it. We're done with you. So the same way over here, the same way over here, Rav Ashi is saying, she's saying I'm entitled to Isu Nechosim. Good. They tell her, okay, so we'll take 10%, we'll take 10% in cash and give it to you. You're not entitled to any particular character or metalpilin or whatever in satisfaction of it.
Okay, so I guess when it comes to collecting from Ziboris and different idiots.
So that's
without Ksuba, we know, gets the word.
Ksuba gets from Ziboris, right.
And if someone heard Immaculate,
So Nezikin is from Idis. It's right. From Idis. It's from the best. So a Baal Choyv is Bainus. No, but what we mean is, in other words, a Baal Choyv, after all, does not have the. So that's exactly it. A regular Baal Choyv gets from Bainus. But we don't say, if he's collecting from land, we don't say, for example, the Baal Choyv doesn't have the right to say, you know what, I'm like a Yodish. I want my debt that you owe me to be paid from such and such. No, it's whoever the people who are paying the debt have the right to determine what they're going to give him. If they're giving him land, they have to give him Bainanus. And if they're giving him anything else, then they can give him anything else. And he has to be willing to accept. So the same way over here, Rav Ashi is saying the daughter to collect her Isur Nechosim is in the same situation. And the Gemara says, "V'af Amema Hodebe." As a matter of fact, Amema also changed his mind and retracted his opinion that she's like a Yodish and agreed that she's like a Baal Choy. And we know that the Amar Manyumi Breder of Nechumi have a Kaimna Kameda Amema. I was standing in front of Amema, but I saw high Ipsal Kameda Habikaboya Isur Nechosim. A woman came to him who wanted to collect her Isur Nechosim. Now I could see that Amema's das, I could see like on his face or whatever, that if the brothers wanted to give her money, and that's it, there's your Isur Nechosim, you don't have any further claims, they would have been able to do that. So even though he didn't say it explicitly, what we can see, how do we see that? The Shami Me'achi, the Havu Ka'amila, because we overheard, Rabban Yumi says, I overheard the brothers telling their sister, Ilu have a lon zuzi. If we had money, salikna bezuzi, we would give you the money, and that's it. So right now we don't have that much cash on hand. Therefore, we have to discuss how we're going to give it to you. But otherwise, we would have preferred to just give you money, and we'll keep all the kauka and all the everything else. And the ishtik like amaluhu v'leimidi. And Amema was quiet and didn't say anything in return. He didn't say to them, you know what, that's wrong. Which Tosfos, by the way, brings an interesting thing from that. It brings Rabbeinu Tam, when he was sitting as a dayan. Suppose you have, sometimes you would have one of the Bala Dinim would be talking to the other in front of the Beis Din and saying, you're going to end up owing me such and such. So now Rabbeinu Tam said, based on this Gemara, if that's not correct, the dayan can't be quiet. Otherwise, like we're saying over here in the Gemara, it amounts to the dayan endorsing what the person is saying. So therefore, Rabbeinu Tam would right away jump in and say, no, that's not true, in order that people don't mistakenly think that he agrees that that is the halach. So Dayan has to be very, very careful, not just with what he says, but also with what he doesn't say.
And when he says also.
Okay. So we see that Amema changed his mind. Now, the Gemara says, V'hashta d'amit b'ala schoiv havya. Now that we say that the daughter, when she receives to get her parnasa, is considered like a b'ala schoiv, the question is, d'aba o d'achi? Is she considered fundamentally a Bala Schoiv against her father? Because after all, usually it would have been her father who supplies it, or against the brothers. Well, the question is, L'mai Nafkamina, well, what's the practical difference? And the difference is, number one, there's two differences. L'migba l'beinanis shalai b'shvua v'ziburis b'shvua. The difference is like this. Number one, is she collecting from Beinanis or from Ziburis? We just said that a Bal Choyv usually collects from Beinanis. The truth is, the Gemara talks about elsewhere, Midaraisa, Bal Choyv would collect from Ziburis, but the Chachamim said, Shalotino Delas, the Chachamim didn't want. People are going to lock their doors and say, why should I bother lending money if I may only get Ziburis, the worst quality character for it? So therefore, they made a Takana Beinanis. If she's now, on the other hand, the rule is, if you're collecting from Nechosim of Yisoimim for a debt that their father owed, then you can collect only from Ziburis. Then the Chachamim left it the way it was originally Min HaTorah. So now the question becomes, if she's a Bala Schoiv of the father, and now the father passed away and she's collecting from the children, then she can only collect from Ziburis. But if she's still considered a Baal Schoiv against the brothers, then she can collect from Benins. So that's one thing we need to know. The second question is Bishvua, or Shaloi Bishvua, or Bishvua. When a Baal Schoiv collects from the person that owes him money, he doesn't generally have to take a Shvua that it was already paid off. Unless the other person claims in Beis Din unless the loiva claims that I paid off, usually we don't require a shvua for the malva to collect. But when it comes to collecting from Yisoimim, you always have to take a shvua. So now again, the question is: if she's baal chayv against the father, then when she wants to collect the parnasa from the children, she needs a shvua that it wasn't already given to her. But if she's baal chayv against the Yisoimim themselves, then that's not necessary. Because she's their own baal chayv, so then it would be the case. It would be equivalent to them borrowing money from her. Where again, she doesn't have to take a shavua in order to collect from them. So that's the question.
So let's say she's a baal chayv. Why would you consider the two options?
So that's what we're saying. We're asking: is the chayv something that was incurred by the father, and now she's collecting from the yisoimim? Therefore, she can collect only from ziburis and only with a shvura. Or is she considered that the chayv only comes into play once the son's yarishin the property, and therefore, then in that case, it would follow the usual rules of baal chayv. She could collect from beinus and without a shvura.
And if it incurred from the father, it's from when she married, or from when?
No, the pashtus it would be from when she was a katana, before her father passed away. Because eventually she's going to grow up and she's going to need this parnasa. So what's the din? So the Gemara says Toshma. Did Avina Agbe Lebrate? Did Rav Ashi Mima Bre? Did Rav Ashi Beinus for Shalai Bishvur? It happened that there was such a case. Rav Ashi's daughter was going to be getting married. Her brother Ma'abar Rav Ashi had inherited the property as usual. So now Ravina, sitting as a dayan, allowed Rav Ashi's daughter, Margaret Rav Ashi's sister, to collect from Beninus without a shvua, showing that he held that it's considered a choiv against her brother, not against her father. Had it been a choiv against her father, against Rav Ashi, then we would say ziburis and it would require a shvua. Similarly, Rav Ashi, ziburis v'shvua. On the other hand, there was a case where there was collected from Rav Sama, who was also a son of Rav Ashi. There it was collected from ziburis and only with a shvua, because so Rashi explains that Rav Sama passed away while Rav Ashi was still alive. So now when his daughter came to collect, so Ma'abar Rav Ashi, her brother, is still alive, therefore she can collect from him without a shvua. But the other part of the estate, again, Rav Sama had passed away. So the other part that he inherited now went to his Yoshim, and therefore to collect from that, she could collect from that only from Ziburis and only with a Shavua. So therefore, so he's
the brother of Ma.
So Rav Sama was the brother of Ma Rav Ashi. There is a different explanation. There are Rishonim who learn that actually the situation was different. Rav Sama had passed away after Rav Ashi, but the point is that she was collecting from Nichsi Yisoimim part of it, and therefore that part had to be from Ziburis with the Shvua, but the other part she was collecting from Ma'abar Rav Ashi. We don't also consider that to be from Yisoimim, but rather she was able to collect for that from Beinanis and without a Shvua. Okay. So the Gemara says, Sholach le Rav Nechemya Breda Rav Yosef le Rav Bar Rav Huna Zuta min Hagar. Rav Nechemya Breda Rav Yosef sent the following message to Rav Bar Rav Huna Zuta from Nahagar. Rav Huna Zuta literally means the younger Rav Huna. So in other words, not the famous Rav Huna, but a different one. Anyway, Ki Asya Ho Itza L'Kamach. When this particular woman who's carrying this letter comes to you and she wants to collect Isu Nechasim from the estate, Agba Isu Nechasim, may have her collect the Isu Nechasim, Afilu Me Itzdrubla. Even from the Itzdrubla, which is, Rashi says, is the foundation or the base where a set of millstones sits on top of them. You have millstones for grinding grain. You have like a stand or a frame that they sit on top of to hold them in place. So even that is considered karka. And since we said parnasa can be collected from karka, then it means they can collect even from that. If they have to sell that Itzdrubla in order to raise money for it, then require them to do that. Similarly, Omer Rav Ashi, Ki Havein and Bei Rav Kahana, Rav Ashi says in a similar vein, when we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, as Talmidim, Havamagbinan, Afilu Me'amola de Basin. We would collect for the Isur Nechasim even from the rent of houses, because the house itself is considered karka, and therefore the rent of it is also considered karka. Tosfos talks about what we mean is that, so the question is, what are we talking about? If the rent hasn't been collected yet, of course, the house is karka. And if the rent's already been collected, then it's metalton like any other. So Tosfos says, let's say we're talking about, let's say the rental period was a year. Now the tenant's already been in there 6 months. So now, on the face of it, now we have a concept in halacha that says rentals and things like that are only payable at the end of the term. So like you have nowadays, you rent an apartment and you have to pay the rent at the beginning of every month. But in halacha, really, it would be that you pay it at the end of the term. So if you have let's say, an annual lease, then you'd be required, from the point of view of halacha, to pay only at the end of the year one lump sum. So now what happens is then, so they haven't paid yet because it's still the middle of the year. They still have another 6 months until the end of the year to pay. That's when we're saying that even though half of it was already incurred during because they've already been living there half a year, nevertheless, it's still considered, that part is still considered karka. We don't say when the rent is paid, only half of it is considered karka because the half that wasn't collected, that where they haven't lived there yet. No, we say the whole thing is considered like karka and she can collect from that. Okay, the Gemara tells a story. Shalach le Rav Onan le Rav Huna. Rav Onan sent the following message to Rav Huna. Huna chavrin shlom. Huna, our colleague, hello. That he's calling him Huna, his colleague, that the Gemara is going to say later that Rav Huna didn't like that. Ki asya ha itzel kamach, when the following woman who's carrying this letter comes to you, ag the isur nechasi, give her a tenth of the nechasi. Well, habi yosef Rav Sheshes kamei. Rav Sheshes at that point was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Huna. Omele, so Rav Huna says to Rav Sheshes, Zil Emele, I want you to go tell Rav Onan the following, and you should know, Vashamte Yehe Mandele Omele, you should know that anyone who doesn't tell it to him is going to be in Cherem. I want you to tell him exactly the following words, even though it's said in a very insulting tone. I don't want you to worry about Rav Onan's cupboard. I want you to tell him exactly the words that I'm telling you. Tell him, Onan, Onan. I mean, Makauti, Oime Metalpli. Are you talking about to collect from Karka or from Metalpin? And also say to him, Uman Yosef Be Marzecha Beresha, who's in a base Marzecha, which the Gemara is going to explain soon, means the house of an oval, when they're eating a meal during the Shiva, who sits at the head of the table? Why he was asking that, we'll get to that second question soon. Also Rav Onan Lakameda Ma'ukva. So when Rav Onan received this message, he went to Ma'ukva. And Rav Huna is kind of putting him down with that by saying Onan, Onan, not just the fact that he's calling him by his first name, fine. He also said Huna Chavrin, but the double expression like that is like when you talk to a person like patronizingly, like, yeah, you know, you little kid, you know. So he goes to Ma'ukva, who was the Reish Galusa at the time. Omele says, Chozimar, hefi shalach li Rav Huna, Onan, Onan. Look, Rav Huna is writing to me, so is telling me a message. But sorry, I skipped a couple of lines. Also Rav Sheshes, the Kamedir of Onan, so Rav Sheshes went to deliver the message. Omele, now he didn't want Rav Onan to be upset at him that he's going to tell him such a chutzpahdika thing. So he says, Omele, ma rabba, you should know you're a great Talmud Chacham, but Rav Huna rabbe de rabba, but you should know Rav Huna is a far greater Talmud Chacham than you. Vishamusi shamis mandale Omele, he said that anybody who doesn't give the following, if I don't give the following message, then it involves Cherem. And you should know v'ilav the shamis lahava ka'imna, ka'amina. If he hadn't threatened that, I wouldn't be telling you the following. But because he did, then I have no choice. Onan onan imkaukle imatalpe man yosef be marzecha bereisha. So also Rav Onan lakameh de ma'ukva. So Rav Onan went to complain to ma'ukva. Omele chozimar hechi shalach li Rav Huna. Onan onan. Look what he sent me in such an insulting, patronizing way. Onan onan. V'oid marzecha b'shalach li lo yodayna ma'aniu. And also he asked me who sits at the marzecha, at the head of the table. What is a marzecha? Omele. So Rav Ma'ukva tells him, Emele izi, tell me Izzy, which there's two possibilities. In some places, Rashi explains that Izzy means my friend. There's a Rashbam in Chumash that explains that it's like the word Eifoy in Chumash. Sometimes you have like me Eifoy who at Sodzai and other expressions like that. In English, the closest thing like that would be so or then. Like you might say in English, well then, tell me. So Izzy would be like that. Anyway, so Ma'okra tells him, tell me my friend or tell me then. Gufa de uvda hechi hava. What exactly happened? What's the whole background to the story? Omele hochi v'hochi hava maisa. So Rav Onan tells him what happened. Omele, so he says, Gavra de la yoda my new marzecha sholach le Rav Huna Huna chavrin. You don't even know what marzecha is. How do you have the break kite to call Rav Huna Huna or friend rather than calling him respectfully Rav Huna? So what is in fact my marzecha ovel? What is a marzeach means an ovel means that in the house of an ovel you have the where the question was who sits at the head of the table, And we know that. We have a pasuk where Hashem tells Yirmiyah, the Churban is coming soon. Don't go to the house of the Ovel to be Menachem, because anyway, soon everybody is going to be sitting Shiva over the Churban and over the loss of their relatives and whatever. And therefore, it's like nobody's going to be sitting Shiva anyway. So don't even bother going to be Menachem Ovel. Mind you, on the pasuk, actually, Rashi brings from Sifri a different possibility that Mazeach actually means a party. And therefore, Hashem is telling Yirmiyah, don't go to parties because not a time for simchas. But the Gemara over here is understanding that it means an oval. So who in fact sits at the head? Amar Rav Abba, minayin lo oval shemesa b'roish. How do we know that the oval sits at the head of the table? Shenemar, and the pasuk says, Eov is talking, reminiscing about the good old days before his current tsaris. He says, everybody would always listen to me. He says, Evchad darkam, I would choose their ways. The eshev roish, I would, meaning in other words, when people would ask me, I would choose for them what the right thing to do. The eshev roish, I would sit at the head. The eshken kamelach bagadud, I would dwell there like a king among his army, where they all respect him. Kasher avelim yinachem, like the way that you comfort avelim. So the Gemara says, so we're saying Eishev Rosh implies that the oval sits at the head. But the Gemara asks, Yenachem Achera Mashma, the word Yenachem means to comfort other people. The oval is not the one who's comforting others, he's being comforted. Where do you see he sits at the head? So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Yinochim Ksiv. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, yes, but the way it's written in the Pasuk can be read as Yinochim. So Rashi explains, if it meant Yenachem with a patach under the nun, then there would have to be an aleph after that to show that the patach is there. Since not, then we can read it as if it said, Yinochem, he is being comforted. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation at all. That's a big doichak. You don't usually find an aleph for that purpose in Pesukim. So rather, Tosfos says, the vote is, it could have said, Akasher Aveinam Minachem, where it would be clear that the oval is the one being comforted. Since it says Yinochem, then it has, and it means, in other words, the one who's being comforted, Yinochem, the one who's being comforted is the one who sits at the head, namely the oval. And then there are Rishonim, we'll talk about other possibilities as well. How exactly we learn it. One of them is, it could have said, Kasher Yenachem Avelim, and it says Kasher Avelim Yenachem, so therefore that allows us to learn that it means that the oval sits at the head. So that was the question that Rav Huna asked Rav Onan, and that's the answer. So by the way, what was going on over here with this whole thing? So Rav Reuven Margolius has a very interesting explanation. He says, Rav Onan was actually related to the Rosh Hagolusa. So was Ma'ukva. And they had a concept where they could give smicha, not the real smicha, ish mipiyish, but a certain form of smicha that allowed a person to be called rab and to be able to judge dinim mominus and whatever in bavel. Rav Huna did not receive that from them. He had an independent thing of it because he received it from rab, who received it from Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore now, so the family of the Reish Galusa, including Rav Onan, used to kind of look down on Rav Huna for that. Therefore, he starts by calling him Huna Chavrin, implying he's only a chavr, he doesn't have smicha. So that's why Rav Huna took offense at it and sent this very short message with Rav Sheshis. And when he's saying who sits at the head of the table is the oval, he's hinting to him, you know what? Why does the oval sit at the head? Not because he's so particularly important, but because right now he's the oval, so therefore we give him that cover. You should know, Rav Onan, it's not you're a Rav in your hometown. It's not because you're such a chosh of a guy. It's because that's who was you were available at the time, basically. So don't put me down that I don't have your smicha, that I don't have your Reish Kabbalah's smicha.
It's also what you know, because he knew something.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. That's why he's asking him in that way, to show that he doesn't know, and to hint to him like the only reason you're a Rav is because there was nobody better available, not because you're such a great guy yourself. He says also, in fact, when he says onan onan, the word onan itself is Rosh Tevis, is Rosh Tevis, Isur Nechosim Nigbes. So is the Isur Nechosim being collected from Kauker or from Metalpin? And Rav Onan didn't understand that. He thought he's just calling him twice by his name, patronizing him. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off. Marzutra has a different pasuk where we see that the oval sits at the head. The pasuk says besor mirzach zruchim. A different navi, the navi Amos says that eventually there's going to be a golus and the mirzach of zruchim is going to go away. We doubt him. The word mirzach means mar v'zach, the one who's bitter and the one whose mind is distracted, namely the oval. Nasasar, he becomes the leader. Lesruchim, for the ones who are great. Sruchim literally means like the words, it can mean smelly, but no, the word serach often means something extra large, like the serach ha'oidith. So the people who are large and great, he becomes the sar, he becomes the leader over them in that he sits by the head of the table.
The city of
Okay, so the Gemara finishes off two more lines. Amar Rabba, Hilchsim and Makauki Vlamatalpli, Ben Lamazoni, Ben Lakasuba, Ben Laparnosa. The bottom line is, as far as all three things, as far as Mizonis or the collection of the actual Ksuba or Parnosa, all of them you can collect only from Kauka, not from the Talpin. Although, as we've talked about before, later on, there was a Pekonis Agaonim that says that you can collect them from the Talpin. Okay, Shukrayach, everyone.